I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Governor Jay Inslee said those $200 energy credits were absolutely not about bribing voters. Strange, considering how fast he's proposing defunding them after the election. Plus, King County's Regional Homelessness Authority spends tens of millions of dollars, we're supposed to believe, helping the homeless, but they did a pretty crappy job of it during last week's storm. Plus, conservative backlash over President-elect Trump's choice for Surgeon General. Is it overblown? We'll discuss that and more coming up today on Undivided. And 'tis the season. Give the gift of common sense this holiday season. You can buy a subscription for a loved one, maybe a child who's in college currently being indoctrinated by their far-left professor. Just sign them up. Patreon.com/undivided/gift. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I hope everyone made it through the bomb cyclone aftermath all right. Bummer to have to cancel a couple shows last week. We got power back here, I think it was Friday evening, so it took a while. And we're going to be talking about the response or lack thereof all week. Like, look, I know trees fall down. I know Puget Sound Energy and the other energy companies were out, you know, working around the clock. I'm not faulting the linemen or anything like that. But our state's response was absolutely abysmal. We're going to talk coming up and unbelievable about the response to try to help people living out on the streets. Also abysmal, despite the fact our state spends billions of dollars and we're to believe that you don't have enough money to get people out of tents and into shelter. Yeah, give me a break. So that's going to be a theme of the show this week. They can't even do the big stuff right. How do we expect them to do the little stuff right? And they certainly have money to do all of it right. We know that our state's budget has bloated over the last 15 years. There is no way in hell our state should be in a budget crisis. Yet here we are, facing a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit. And Republicans warned about this for years. We'll discuss that as well. We have Drew Stokesbury coming up, the House Minority Leader, who was the budget lead on the Republican side for a long time before he went into leadership. And they had warned about this exact thing. You know, we had all this revenue coming in, and then the pandemic hit, and Republicans were like, hey, you know, now you got federal dollars coming in, so don't get too crazy with spending it on new programs, because as soon as, you know, maybe the economy retracts or that spending retracts, you're going to find yourself in a pinch. It's budgeting 101. But Democrats didn't listen. Why would they listen? They have full control in Olympia to do what they want, to fund the programs they want. So they just do what they want to do. Now they're going to come into this legislative session $10 to $12 billion short, and they're going to have to figure out how to deal with that. So Governor Inslee, he had sent out a letter last week to all his, through the Office of Financial Management, to all the state agencies, basically saying, hey, you need to do what you can now to cut spending, maybe eliminate some spending that, you know, is on the horizon or hasn't fully manifested that you planned for. Don't plan for it now. In addition to that, this from the Office of Financial Management. So the governor's office and its affiliates, they called it. So basically the agencies the governor's office controls. They're going to freeze hiring for most positions, freeze all new contracts that are not already pre-approved. All existing subscriptions will be reviewed for utilization, freeze all non-essential travel, blah, 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 freeze all new equipment purchases. That's like the bare minimum, right? But that stuff is not going to add up to $10 to $12 billion in savings. So now we're starting to see what some of these state agencies are proposing. Now, first of all, the idea that they're going to cut $10 to $12 billion in spending, that Democrats are going to do that, is ridiculous. What are they going to do? We talked about the show last week. They're going to look for new revenue, which means new taxes. That is going to be primarily how they seek to fill the budget deficit, because they haven't learned their lesson. They have a spending problem. It's an addiction. It's like a stay-at-home wife, trophy wife, who's got her husband's credit card and is just out at Home Goods every day. And I say Home Goods because that's what I would do if I were a trophy wife. I'd be at Home Goods every day too. But that's how Democrats treat our state budget. They're not going to stop spending because it's an addiction that they have, and they're shoveling money out to their cronies and allies. So they're just going to look for more money to come in so they don't have to cut anything. But in the meantime, they're at least going to, oh, let's throw taxpayers a bone. Like, let's find a few million dollars here and there. Like, cutting stuff that's not even going to come close to putting a dent in the deficit that we face. So in the Office of Governor Jay Inslee, he's released some proposed cuts for fiscal year 2025 and the 2025-2027 budget. And keep in mind, he's only going to be the governor for like another what, month and a half? So what he is proposing cutting isn't necessarily going to be what Bob Ferguson would cut. And what he's cutting, this is just for his office, not for like state government as a whole. Like he's talking about what, like a few million dollars. Like this is really going to make a difference at the end of the day. But some of this stuff I'm in favor of. And it also shows you how frivolous the spending was that got us into this situation. Like, for instance, he's cutting part of his Office of Equity. Yeah, that shouldn't even exist. So I'm glad that you're making cuts to it. Also, the community survey for the LGBTQ commission. Yeah, that has no place in state government, especially in a very progressive state where LGBTQ people are just fine. So yeah, some of those things, great. That's what I would have gone in there and slashed too. But then there are some things that really sent our little, our hackles, is that what you call them? Alarm bells. Yeah, that really rang our alarm bells. So one of them, he is going to be cutting entirely Results WA. That's a proposal from Governor Inslee to cut Results WA. Now, if that sounds familiar to you, it should, because we've talked about Results WA here on the show. Results Washington is a website that exists because of Governor Jay Inslee. He came into office and basically said that when it comes to some of the things that he wanted to push, like his climate policies, he was going to create a website that would track progress. And if you go to the website, Results Washington, it has some of like the goals that the governor's put forth and where they are in terms of fulfilling those goals. And so in principle, I think that sounds like a very good thing. Like, yeah, the governor's promising all these things. He's taxing us to achieve all these things. So let's have a website that was supposed to be nonpartisan, just a absolutely black and white facts and figures. Is Governor Jay Inslee and his administration and state government achieving some of these lofty climate goals that they've set forth? Except the reason we talked about this, and it was actually on the show about a year ago, is because King 5 News had done this investigation into Governor Inslee's climate agenda and found out that he's not meeting any of his goals. Like, in fact, there are aspects of his climate agenda that are worse today than they were when he took office as the climate governor. Like, recycling is down, for instance. Carbon emissions are up. And what King 5 News pointed out in its reporting a year ago is that, in theory, Washingtonians wouldn't have had to wait for King 5 News to do this reporting. They could have gone to Results Washington and saw that for themselves, that, hey, things aren't going well, except the government was manipulating Results Washington so it did not show these failures. Again, this from King 5 News a year ago. When Inslee came into office 10 years ago, he created via executive order a state agency, Results Washington, to set, track, measure, and publicize state goals such as environmental targets. It was part of the state's mission to adopt lean management principles through a strategy of performance management and continuous state government improvement. Inslee said at the time, holding ourselves accountable for results to the citizens of Washington isn't politically expedient. It is clearly the right thing to do. But over the years, Results Washington has watered down the results. The agency has scrubbed most of the environmental goals and measurements from its website. Instead, it now features pages of state reports, links to federal information, graphs, maps, and spreadsheets. So Results Washington was rendered completely useless because Governor Inslee came into office saying he wanted to be accountable for these goals, but when he set goals that were completely unrealistic, yet they were taking hundreds of millions of dollars in your tax revenue and your money to not achieve these things, someone directed Results Washington, which was supposed to be nonpartisan facts and figures. Hey, just bury those results. You know, the governor can't have a website that's run by the state showing that he's not achieving any of these climate goals. So just bury the results. Well, now instead of just bury the results deep in that website and all these graphs and links and pages, they're just going to get rid of the website entirely. Yeah, that's one of the things, one of the ways Governor Inslee is proposing that they save money in a budget deficit is just to do away with the website that he said he wanted to create when he took office to hold themselves accountable for the results to the citizens of Washington State. And he's recommending that ahead of a new governor taking office who is one of, if not the least transparent politicians in the state. So Lord only knows that Bob Ferguson doesn't want Results Washington. He doesn't want a website that tracks whether he's making good on the promises that he made on the campaign trail, because we know that the promises he made on the campaign trail were utter bullshit. Came out of nowhere. Oh, we're going to hire more police officers. That's never going to happen. no police officers want to work for you. And now you're not going to have the money, the $100 million you promised voters that you were going to dedicate toward hiring new police officers. You're not going to have that because now we have a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit. So God forbid that Bob Ferguson comes into office and there's a state agency, Results Washington, that's going to track whether he's actually making good on his promises. He can't have that. He hates transparency. So Jay Inslee's doing him a favor by saying, we're in a budget deficit. What's one of the first things to go? The website that's going to track whether Bob Ferguson is doing what he's supposed to be doing. You can't make this stuff up. It's delicious. It's horrifying, but it's also delicious. All right. A couple of the other cuts that we saw that were being flagged from other agencies. Again, they were asked to put forward some of their suggestions and ways that they could quickly and easily save some money before lawmakers meet in January and have to really dive deep and make some hard cuts. Let's see. Department of Commerce. What is the Department of Commerce going to cut? Okay, they got a little things here. Reducing training here. Reduce ethnic media contracts. Okay, that sounds like a good thing to go. Like, all on board. It also shows how... Oh, preventing farm worker sexual harassment. I guess that's a big enough thing to have warranted hundreds of thousands of dollars in spending. Let's see, going down the list. Here's an interesting one. Number six, unspent CCA funds, Washington Families Clean Energy Credit. Wait a second. So you're going to find $3.3 million in savings by cutting the Washington Families Clean Energy Credits? Weren't those the energy credits that you doled out right before the election to bribe, I mean, not bribe voters, to help families that were struggling to pay their energy bills because of the Climate Commitment Act? Here's Governor Jay Inslee announcing that very, very, very important program earlier this year.
We're putting several millions of dollars to help people get a check so that they can help you pay your utility bills. It's a right thing to do for hardworking Washingtonians.
It's the right thing to do for hardworking Washingtonians to bribe them with their own money. I mean, help them with their energy bills. So why are you getting rid of it? If that's the right thing to do for hardworking Washingtonians, so much so that you had multiple press conferences talking about the importance of these energy credits to hardworking Washingtonians, why are you getting rid of it? And besides, if you get rid of it now, right after the election, after people accused you of using it as a bribe to stop the repeal of the Climate Commitment Act, won't that just prove the point that it was a bribe? I mean, Governor Inslee denied that it was a bribe all along.
Are you trying to bribe voters with this?
No, they're trying to take away $200 from these families. Who wants to take away $200 credit from a family to help them with their costs of these low-income folks? That's reprehensible. You know what else? It's weird.
Who would want to take away these energy credits from these families? Who would want to do that? It's reprehensible. It's weird. So who would do that? Oh, that's right. Governor Jay Inslee and his Department of Commerce would do that after the election. They're not going to take that $3.3 million and continue to give energy credits to energy customers whose bills haven't gone down. No, they're just going to scrub that entirely because it was, of course, all along just a bribe to voters ahead of the election. And now that the election's over, now that they got the result they wanted, they're going to continue to take your money at the gas pump and via higher energy bills. They're going to continue to do that at higher and higher rates, but they're not going to give that money back to you now. Why would they? Like, you did what they wanted you to do. You kept the Climate Commitment Act, so there's no need to continue to bribe you with your own money via $200 energy credits. These people are shameless, and they're shameless because the media allows them to be shameless, 100%. Let's see. Let's check in on the Department of Social and Health Services, shall we? What are some ways that they're going to try to cut their budget? Oh, yes. They're going to reduce spending at the Special Commitment Center on McNeil Island. Ah, yes. It's the very first place I would cut spending. The island where we house the worst of the worst sex offenders, the sexually violent predators who are at such a high propensity to reoffend that we take them and we put them on an island that they cannot get off of. It's our very own Alcatraz. Yeah, they're going to propose, closing a unit and defunding a unit that was closed a few years ago. So, hey, it was closed a few years ago. Why are we still having staff to deal with that unit if we don't have anyone in it. So that'll save us $1.483 million. Also, the Redwood unit is being run at half capacity, but positions were not reduced to reflect the reduced bed capacity. So you're telling me that you had a unit that was at half capacity, yet staffing was at full capacity? Wow, that sounds wasteful. So yeah, I'm totally in favor of that staff reduction. That'll save you about $930,000. But here's what that shows. Like, I'm totally in agreement with those reductions if you have staff that aren't doing anything on the island. Yeah, if you've got a unit that isn't being used, if you got beds that aren't being filled, we don't need staff for that, right? That makes sense. But this speaks to something that we've discussed for the last year, that Bob Ferguson was 100% lying when he said on the campaign trail that he was out there keeping sex offenders on McNeil Island, protecting us from these sex offenders. We know that the reason they can reduce spending on McNeil Island is because the state is letting these sex offenders off McNeil Island at record rates. The Seattle Times did a story on it. Washington confined hundreds for sexual violence. Then it quietly began releasing them. It talked about the fact that 12 years ago, right before Bob Ferguson took office as Attorney General, they were releasing maybe one a year from McNeil Island, maybe one. And then Bob Ferguson took office as Attorney General, which is tasked with either keeping or fighting to keep or not fighting to keep these sexually violent predators on the island. And it went from maybe one being released into communities every year to dozens. Dozens. So yeah, of course they can cut spending to McNeil Island, because we've let all the sexually violent predators, we've released them into communities, into less secure facilities in a neighborhood near you. And then Bob Ferguson, again on the campaign trail, acted like it never happened. In fact, he had a whole section on his campaign website, "Standing up for survivors of violent crime, Bob kept nearly 100 of the most violent sex predators out of our communities." Except, of course, they didn't mention all the ones that they'd released into our communities. So yeah, no surprise that the Department of Social and Health Services can save some money on McNeil Island, because people like Bob Ferguson, who now got a promotion, didn't stand in the way of releasing sexually violent predators from McNeil Island. So yeah, there's some cost savings there. Not the area, I will tell you, not the area that I want there to be cost savings in the state of Washington, is confining the worst of the worst sex offenders. We don't have fewer violent sex offenders. It's not like there's been some giant societal shift where all of a sudden there aren't horrible, dangerous perverts out there. No, they're still out there. It's just our state doesn't care to put them on an island anymore. Our state doesn't even really care to put them in prison. Our state is going to put them in less secure facilities. What do they call those? LRAs? Residential? I don't remember what that stands for. Less restrictive alternatives. Mm-hmm. Less restrictive alternatives, right down the street from bus stops. Yeah, like they tried to do in Enumclaw, like they tried to do in Tenino. Totally under the radar, not letting communities know what was going on. Just take, you know, Joe Pedophile off McNeil Island, who had to go there because even after his prison sentence, because he was deemed irredeemable. And Bob Ferguson's office just opened the door, stood out of the way, and sent them to a community near you so they could live in a house that didn't even have added security down the street from a bus stop where kids gather in the morning. It's just wild stuff. So cost savings there. Great. Love it. Where they are going to find cost savings, where they are going to make budget cuts, tells you everything you need to know about the people in power. Like, yeah, I see some recommended budget cuts here that are great. Anything that says equity, gone. That's it should be gone. Should never have existed to begin with. So hopefully this is an opportunity to rid the state of some of the DEI nonsense. But at the same time, you look at these other things, like eliminating the really important energy credits for families that are struggling to pay their energy bills. We could do that before the election, but after the election, nah, that's not such a priority of ours. All right, coming up next, the House Minority Leader, who for years was the Republican lead in Olympia on the budget, is going to join us to talk about how he anticipates Democrats trying to make up for a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit. First, if you are looking at your own family's budget, because unlike the government, we actually have to budget. We can't just, when we're short on money, well, the law-abiding among us don't go out and just steal that money from other people to pay our bills. We actually have to budget. So if that's you and you haven't taken the First Mark challenge yet, highly recommend doing so. It doesn't cost you anything, totally free, and you'll never pay First Mark a dime for their services. But what they can do is handle your insurance needs for you, make sure that you have the best possible insurance plan for what your family needs, that you're not paying for insurance you don't need, and they can make sure that you have the best rate. We hear endless stories from undivided viewers and listeners with all sorts of different experiences with First Mark. For instance, Karina said that she had reached out to First Mark just to see if they could save her money. And Brad with First Mark emailed her back and actually said, "I'd stay put with your current insurance. You did a great job. We can't do any better than that for you. So if anything changes in the future, give us a call. But for now, Karina, stay with what you've got." I think that's a sign of an honest company. And then we have people who tell us that they reached out to First Mark and First Mark was able to save them thousands, like Michelle. She says her and her husband were going to take the First Mark challenge, but everything kind of seemed fine. And then they got this massive renewal notice from their existing provider where their insurance was going to go up $3,000. I hate to laugh, but it's just insane. So she went to First Mark. They did the First Mark challenge and First Mark ended up saving them more than 50%. So see what your First Mark story will be. Take the First Mark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. All right. So the state has a couple options facing a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit. It can go in and do the hard work like every family does when it has an issue with its budget, and it can make cuts and it can decide what's really, really necessary spending and what's simply not. Or it can turn around and just increase taxes or find new streams of revenue so they can continue their out-of-control spending. I think Republicans hope that they'll do the first thing and that they'll go in and they'll make some hard decisions. But there are certainly some Democrats who would rather continue the out-of-control spending and just tax you more. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right. Republican State Representative Drew Stokesbury, for years in Olympia, he was the budget guy for Republicans. So he'd sit in the room with Democrats. They'd talk over the budget. They'd try to come to some sort of consensus. They'd all talk about their priorities, and then they'd leave the room and Democrats would get their way, of course, because Democrats are in the majority. But one of the things for years and years Republicans have been warning Democrats about is not spending every dime that comes in. Like, hey, we got to put some away for a rainy day, especially during the pandemic when we've got all this money coming in that's not going to be there forever. So don't treat it like it's going to be there forever. It's a temporary revenue stream. And Democrats didn't listen. Now we find ourselves in this predicament. So now Drew Stokesbury is the House Minority Leader. So he's the head of the Republican caucus in the House. He joins us on the show today to talk about what he thinks is going to happen in the months ahead as they try to contend with this budget crisis. Representative, welcome to Undivided.
Hi, Brandy. How are you? Thanks to be here.
I'm doing well. The question is, how are you? Awful nice of Governor Inslee to stick you guys in this situation on his way out the door.
Yeah, you know, 12 years and this is his final gift, but at least he's going out the door.
Yeah, he won't have to deal with it. I swear I recall you, Senator Braun, and other Republicans warning Democrats of this exact scenario for years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There were several years in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 where we didn't just have a decent budget picture, but like a really good budget picture. Coming out of the recession, coming out of the COVID lockdowns, we had, you know, probably a $10 or $15 billion budget surplus. We had more money than we knew what to do with. And Republicans were constantly saying this money should go back to the taxpayers. Every other state in the country, practically, including California, New York, Massachusetts, you know, not really red bastions of conservatism, were passing tax cuts. And if we weren't going to give the money back to the people, we needed to at least save it for a rainy day. And that's where we're at now. The Democrats didn't listen, as usual, and now they've got some really, really tough decisions to make.
Yeah, it's just kind of high level. We already went through on the show some things that caught our eye. I mean, there's a lot of that could be cut. I mean, you, me, some bourbon, let's just sit at a table and just start, we'll just start slashing things, okay? So, I mean, there's a ton that can be cut from this, but do you think the Democrats are going to lean on cuts or are they going to push new taxes?
I think they're going to push new taxes. Yeah. Over the summer, as it was becoming clear, just sort of like how catastrophic the budget picture was looking, I heard some really disturbing things, granted second and third hand, from Democrat legislators, essentially saying that cuts are completely off the table and they will only look at new revenue. And that's just straight up offensive. Look, I mean, I know that Democrats and Republicans might have differing views on the size and scope of government. Right now, there's more Democrats than Republicans. So if you look at a given program and more people examine it closely and say, this is worth doing, okay, so be it. There was an election that has consequences. But to have the hubris to say that we won't even entertain the question, that's really next level. That's really offensive. To be fair, I don't know if that's where they're going to end up. That's what folks were saying 6 months ago. I think now there's at least a fig leaf of consideration towards reductions. And look, I know Republicans and Democrats might not agree on every line item, but we at least got to have a robust discussion about how we got here, what choices we made spending-wise, and have a critical look at those programs. Every program in the budget is passed with the goal of it doing good. But we're human. Not everything we do is perfect. And we need to have the humility to admit that and revisit some of those decisions and question. Here's what we wanted to accomplish. Is it doing that or not? If so, great. But if not, we got to be willing to take a red pen to it and come up with another way of solving the problem.
Yeah. Do they have the ability, forgive me for sounding naive, but the ability to make sort of overarching budgetary decisions with the majorities that they have?
Yeah, I mean, the budget needs to pass with a simple majority vote. So
it does. Okay.
If the Democrats stick together, they sort of can pass that however they want. State law requires that it be balanced not just over the 2-year budget period, but over a 4-year budget outlook period. That's probably the one good fiscal thing that the state has going for it, that and our pensions are pretty well funded. So it's got to balance, but that's the only requirement. So it's kind of up to the majority to decide how to balance it through reductions, through tax increases, or a combination.
Yeah. So on the in the new tax realm, if they do decide to go that route, which I strongly would hope that they'd reconsider, what do you think is the most likely path?
Well, that's most likely. That's tough. In contrast to what I said a second ago, where some Democrats were saying that no cuts are on the table, cuts are completely off the table. With regard to tax increases, they seem to be saying everything is on the table. You know, there are certain taxes that are going to be more politically palatable because ordinary people don't see them. If the Democrats raise the sales tax or raise the property tax, all 7 million Washingtonians would see that show up pretty quickly. So that's pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
I think more likely is trying to change some of the taxes on business around the margins, perhaps going after some of the bigger businesses. There is an idea to increase the real estate excise tax that has been around for a couple years that would really only show up when you sell your home. The one new big idea that seems to be getting some traction is to take Seattle's head tax or payroll tax, or it's really a jobs tax. It's literally you're taxing the jobs that the companies are creating. And expand that statewide.
Wow. So more in line with, I mean, they went through two iterations of that. One was literally a head tax, like a tax per employee. The other one was a tax on high-paying jobs. So taxing jobs that pay over a certain amount annually. Is it the latter that they'd be considering?
Yeah. So the most recent version I heard was a hybrid of the two. It would only apply to companies if their average, you know, salary per employee is over a threshold. Mm-hmm. But if a company hits that threshold, it applies to all their employees.
Wow.
At all pay ranges.
Yeah, insane. Insane, considering the business climate. Do you believe they're bold enough, do you believe they're bold enough to immediately turn around and reduce the threshold for the capital gains tax?
I think there's at least some that are, and the question is going to be whether enough are, and whether, you know, Republicans and folks that believe in common sense like yourself can do a good enough job sort of sounding the alarm. I mean, this was Republicans' concern all along that, you know, there's some unfairness in having the 98% of the people gang up on the 2% of the people and say, haha, you got to pay more. I don't think that's very fair. But beyond that, there's the, you know, just as a practical matter, Olympia never reduces taxes. We never say, oh, you're going to have to pay less or a lower rate or fewer people have to pay. It only ever goes the other direction. We're only ever lowering thresholds, getting rid of exemptions, increasing rates. And so, yeah, I mean, I think now that capital gains tax was on the ballot, it survived. It survived a couple different court challenges now. I disagree with those challenges. You know, I disagree with the voters' decision, but the voters have spoken. And yeah, I am concerned that will make some Democrats feel empowered to say, hey, you know, a big chunk of voters want this. Now we can start expanding it. We can make it apply to more people. We can raise the rate. We can, right now, if you sell your home, that's exempt. But it doesn't have to always be that way. If you get 50 votes in the House and 25 in the Senate and a governor to go along with it, you could now make the sale of your primary residence be subject to capital gains tax. And the way real estate prices are going here, that would capture a whole lot of just regular middle class homeowners.
Yeah, I absolutely see them doing that. I don't know if they're bold enough to do it this year, given the fact that they just like sold this as a tax on the wealthy, but maybe they're shameless enough to just do it anyway. I'm not really sure. Where would you like to see cuts? Where would you like, because you handled the budget on the Republican side for years until you became the minority leader. So where do you think there's room to cut?
Yeah, you know, I think there are certainly some structural changes we can do. But I think more importantly, we got to go sort of line by line, program by program, and assess from, you know, through legislative staff, through the governor's staff, or I guess the governor-elect's staff or soon-to-be staff, assess the efficacy of these programs. Like I said a second ago, almost anything in the budget is a good idea, you know, other than something like state funds going to fund abortions. There's very few things in there that, like, people would find, like anybody on either side would find sort of morally objectionable.
I can name a few. Okay, go ahead.
Most everything's a good idea. It's just the question is, should this be something the state pays for or is handled in the private economy?
Yeah.
And out of a limited set of state funds, because unlike the federal government, we can't run a deficit. We can't print our own money. You know, is this better doing than not doing? Or is this worth doing even if it means having to raise taxes? So we just got to look through those programs carefully and understand, are they working as intended? And if not, those should be the first ones on the chopping block. We also, I think, can start with what we've done most recently. It's probably a lot harder to tell somebody that has been part of a program for 20 years, I'm sorry, your program's going away. It should be a lot easier to tell somebody whose program started 2 months ago, hey, we made a bad decision last year, we're going to hit the undo button.
Yeah, I can think of a lot of morally objectionable things, Drew, if you want some advice. The laser hair removal for transgender inmates, that can go. The entire program built around hiding kids from their parents if they question their gender, that can go. But, you know, we need a lot bigger cuts than that for sure. One question to end with. The incoming governor, as one of four leaders, two leaders on the Republican side, for the four corners of the legislature. Have you spoken to the governor-elect?
I've not spoken to the governor-elect. I've spoken with his staff. I'm meeting with him in a couple of weeks. And I've got some thoughts to share. All constructive, but opinionated.
If you would care to tell us, what is your overarching advice for him as he enters office?
To focus on Washington State's problems. He was elected to lead Washington. Other people were elected to lead the country. Other people were elected to solve the country's problems. He wasn't elected to lead the country or solve the country's problems. He was elected to solve the state's problems. We have got sky-high inflation, sky-high cost of gas, sky-high housing, sky-high childcare costs, plummeting test scores, the fewest police officers per capita. Washington is facing a catalog of crises. And the governor campaigned on fixing a lot of them. If you look at his campaign platform, a lot of his ideas were taken from bills that House Republicans have been pushing for a number of years to no avail. So he won saying that he was going to fix all the problems Washington is facing that House Republicans have been pointing out for years. He needs to govern that way, too.
Yeah, if he wants to take your ideas, if he wants to take your ideas and do something, great. Sorry to interrupt you, Drew. All right. Any closing thoughts for you on the budget?
I think the only thing that I just want to make sure you and all your listeners and everybody in Washington understands is we got here because of deliberate choices by the Democrat majority. It's one thing if we were in a recession and unemployment was really high and the stock market was tanking for the minority party to point fingers and say, you made wrong decisions. You know, frankly, if the Republicans had been in charge and then we were in a recession, the Republican budget would probably be in trouble, too. But we're not in a recession. No serious economist thinks we are. They're arguing whether the economy is good or great. But we're facing the biggest budget deficit we've faced since the Great Recession. You only have that big of a budget hole in good economic times if you made bad decisions. And the Democrats made bad decisions, and they're going to have to pay a price for that.
Couldn't agree more. All right, House Minority Leader Drew Stokesbury, we appreciate your time, and I think we'll be talking to you quite a bit this session, if that's all right.
Yeah, look forward to it, Brandy.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a mess. It is, and it's going to take over the entire legislative session. You know, in some ways, maybe that's good. Maybe they can't spend time pushing completely unnecessary, wild new bills because they're so focused on trying to figure out the budget deficit. So maybe there's a silver lining there. But they're also not going to be able to, in any meaningful way, make progress on the crises that we're facing, right? Because whenever you talk about, oh, the homeless crisis is getting worse or the drug crisis, they always attach that to money. Like, okay, if you want it to get better, we need more money. If you want the housing to get better, we need more money. If you want the drug crisis to get better, we need more money. If you want the mental health crisis to get better, education to get better, whatever it is, we need more money. So their excuse now, and the excuse that's going to be handed to the new governor coming in, is going to be, well, I would have made those things better, but we didn't have any money. And that wasn't my fault because Governor Inslee left us with this massive budget deficit. So just be mindful of that. And we all reject the notion that it's more money that's going to lead to better outcomes. How do we know that that's not the case? Well, more money hasn't led to better outcomes to date. We spend more money than ever on the homeless crisis. It's worse. We spend more money than ever on the mental health crisis. It's worse. We spend more money than ever on housing. Affordability is worse. The money spent on education has skyrocketed. And the educational outcomes are worse. So we have to reject this notion that it's simply a matter of just throwing more money at a problem that will make it better, because they have shown that that's very clearly not the case. So we can't let money be used as an excuse for a lack of progress on these really critical issues. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And we know Future 42 is going to continue to be a great partner in the push for common sense spending at the state level. All right. Speaking of, you know, talked about homelessness. You can spend billions, trillions even of dollars on the homeless crisis, and it will not make a difference if the people who are in charge of trying to make homelessness better fail at their jobs. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Do, 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 do. Boop. All right. So as I was saying earlier, you know, there are some things that government ought to be able to do, some core functions they ought to be able to do well, if they do nothing else well. Like, for instance, in an emergency situation like we had last week with the bomb cyclone, like, we should be able to make sure that people aren't without power for 6 to 7 days without the state stepping in and, like, helping out in some form or fashion, except Governor Inslee said, well, local agencies have to come to us if they want help. If they want me to declare a state of emergency, as if he cared, first of all, I digress, but as if he cared what local jurisdictions wanted during the pandemic. So many of them were screaming for him to leave them alone and let them handle the pandemic. And he shoved their state of emergency, his state of emergency, down their throats for 975 days. And now that there's a storm, he's like, well, I'm not going to step on the toes of the counties and the cities. No, no, no. If they want help from the state and they want me to declare a state of emergency and send in the National Guard, well, they're going to have to come groveling to me for it. It's just ridiculous. But I want to talk about the King County Regional Homelessness Authority and its bungling of this storm. Like, you and I, Nicole, let's just say, okay, I am an agency that's tasked with helping the homeless, and I have endless revenue to do so, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I have billions of dollars over time, but let's say tens of millions of dollars. Let's be generous. Tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. There's a big storm coming in. It's going to be dangerous. Like, it's called a bomb cyclone, and it's going to be high winds, obviously dangerous for people living in tents, right? Like, what's your first priority going to be?
Would be to get people out of tents.
Right.
Tents, yeah, not safe in a storm. It's not what you typically would take camping and so consider yourself safe in.
You're hired. You are the new head of the King County Regional Homeless Authority. But, like, right, 70-mile-an-hour winds. Would any of us go out camping in 70-mile-an-hour winds? Unless we're, like, climbing Mount Everest and we know the winds are going to be high. Like, we've planned for that, right?
That's a special kind of tent, though.
That's a special kind of tent. We're going to buckle that bad boy down. And we're not expecting comfort.
These tents, you've just made kites.
Yeah, you just made kites. And so, yeah, that's the first thing, right? Okay, we can't stop the storm. We have homeless people. We already know that we're not going to be able to help them all out of homelessness by then. So let's just set up some sort of emergency shelter situation. Let's reach out to our public-private partnerships. We've got endless empty buildings, like all the old brick and mortar shops. I'm sure you can find some defunct Office Depots or Bed Bath and Beyonds that went into the beyond and no longer function. Thousands of square feet. Let's get the tents inside. Step number one, right?
In fact, we're going to talk about Lynnwood, and there is a Bed Bath & Beyond that closed. Big, huge building.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Maybe that's where this woman who died in a tent, a homeless woman, in Lynnwood, because of the high winds, a large tree fell on a homeless encampment. This is from South County Fire. Firefighters responded after a large tree fell on a homeless encampment off Alderwood Mall Parkway in Lynnwood shortly after 7 p.m. tonight. Tragically, a woman in her 50s died. No other injuries were reported. Okay. To be expected, yeah. There were trees falling down everywhere. There was even a woman who was killed in a nice-sized house showering, and a tree fell on her very nice house. I'm assuming it was a well-built house, and killed her, because that's what trees do. So, of course, if a tree falls on a tent, the person in it's going to die. You know, but we have hundreds of millions of dollars that we give this agency, the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, to try to help these individuals. And I think that this is actually the Lynnwood woman. Technically, that's Snohomish County, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. But still, same principle applies. So King County Regional Homelessness Authority, this is the extent of the help they gave homeless people during the bomb cyclone. It's so similar to Inslee's response. Like, our protocols don't allow us to do anything because it's wind. We don't have protocols for wind.
Even something called a cyclone.
We don't have protocols for wind. We have protocols for cold weather. We have protocols for snow, but this is wind. What are we supposed to do? It says the King County's severe weather protocol, the King County Regional Homelessness Authority's severe weather protocols are not currently active, as the incoming storm meets neither our temperature, precipitation, nor duration thresholds. We have not activated our protocols. Soak that in. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it's not snow, it's wind. So we're not going to activate these protocols. Here's how we are responding. We have sent safety information to our county-wide service providers and governmental partners. In lieu of having our severe weather shelter lists active, that's one of our protocols, we are directing people and partners to our regional services database for access to year-round services. We have started internal conversations about how to respond when wind events that don't meet our other activation thresholds occur. If you're able to seek shelter inside a safe building during the day, you can rely on public spaces such as malls or shopping centers in Seattle Public Libraries or King County Libraries or day centers. At night, if you're able, seek overnight shelter. You can use the King County Regional Homelessness Authority's Regional Services Database. Yeah, where's the homeless person going to do that? I mean, I know some of them have phones. Here's the tips. We're not gonna help you, but we'll give you some tips. If you're staying outside, tie down tents and canopies with additional lines and strong pegs or anchors. I hate to laugh, but this is so stupid. If you can move your camp downwind of a large object like a building without causing an obstruction, do so. Avoid areas with power lines, large overhanging tree branches, or dead trees. Secure loose objects like chairs or garbage cans that could blow away. If you're staying in your car or RV, follow the same guidance for those staying outside when applicable. Shutter your windows securely and brace outside doors. I need you all to wrap your minds around this. I need you all to wrap your minds around this. That is the advice they gave an agency that gets hundreds of millions of dollars from taxpayers to help the homeless. And their advice was to put more substantial stakes in your tent. Or maybe don't set your tent up right underneath a tree. Sound advice, but I could give that advice. Common sense, even for a homeless person, probably gives them that advice. Like, hey, 70 mile an hour winds, I'm gonna take all that crap I have outside my tent and I'm gonna bring it inside my tent. Like, we don't need a multi-million dollar government agency to tell them that. And their honest to God excuse, for not activating their emergency shelter protocol is because their emergency shelter protocol only kicks in for different kinds of weather events. We have no protocol for high wind. What do we do? Oh, let's start internal conversations about how to respond when wind events that don't meet our other activation thresholds occur. So the next wind event, they'll do better because they'll have had their internal conversations about how to respond when wind events that don't meet our other activation thresholds occur, because their activation thresholds only if it's too cold or too hot outside, only if it's snowing quite a bit. Then we're going to put that plan into action that taxpayers have spent hundreds of millions of dollars helping us craft. But if it's high wind, hands are tied. Throw an extra stake on your tent. Absolutely, not just unbelievable, disgusting, criminal. That's corruption. I know it's not corruption in the traditional sense, but when your incompetence as a government agency literally kills people, literally puts people in harm's way, that's corruption to me. Every single person at that agency who was part of that decision not to put its emergency protocols in place should lose their jobs. But that's not what we do in the public sector. When you fail, we let you keep your high-paying job, your six-figure job. You have people at the King County Regional Homelessness Authority making six figures who are sitting in a warm office or home somewhere deciding that 70-mile-an-hour winds, a once-in-a-generation bomb cyclone, didn't meet the threshold to activate emergency shelter for the people living on the streets that they're tasked with helping because it wasn't the kind of weather event that they were prepared for. Criminal corruption should lose their jobs. Insane stuff. All right, we have some national news. We're going to go to Denver. We're going to talk about Donald Trump's pick for Surgeon General. God, Denver, that's quite the video clip we've got for you. First, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point this year, and I'll just be honest, I know a lot of you said that these election results were it for you. You're going to move out of state. I don't want you to move out of state, but if you're going to, you might as well use our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes has been a real estate agent in our area for a long time. He's been through the markets, ups and downs, and he can help you get a grasp on what to expect and set your expectations, you know, given where the market's at, given where your home's at, the condition of your home and all of those things. So he's going to start by setting your expectations, but then he's going to talk to you about really the unique services they have to offer, like their Listing Boost concierge service, which is just so cool. Like, let's say you need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home. You really don't have the money to come out of pocket for that. Well, Wes Jones can not only help you pay for those upgrades up front, but he can manage them. So it takes it entirely off your plate, manage the projects, get those upgrades done, help you pay for it up front so you can get the most possible money for your home. And then you repay them on the back end. So we've had a ton of viewers and listeners who've taken advantage of the Listing Boost concierge service. They've had fantastic results. Wes was able to get their homes sold in days, even when the market was not doing so well earlier this year. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, getting into some national news. I've got to play this clip from the mayor of Denver, Mike Johnston, because I think you could just as easily replace Mike Johnston with Bob Ferguson. And Bob Ferguson probably say the exact same thing, because what we're going to have coming up soon when Donald Trump is sworn into office again is you're going to have these increasing conflicts between deep blue sanctuary areas and the Trump administration when Donald Trump hopefully makes good on his promise to really take a more aggressive approach at getting some of these illegal immigrants out of our country, who have, especially the ones who have committed new crimes since being here. But you have California, Washington State. I mean, good Lord, the first press conference Bob Ferguson had after he won the election in November was to talk about how he's going to fight Donald Trump. This is absolutely one of the things he's going to fight Donald Trump on. And so is the mayor of Denver, Mike Johnston, who says he's more than willing to go to jail if that's what it takes to push back against these policies.
About civil disobedience, you've mentioned that a couple of times now. Would you be willing to participate in those as the mayor of Denver? Would you be willing to go out and protest these things?
I would. If I believe that our residents are having their rights violated, if I think things are happening that are illegal or immoral or un-American in our city, I would certainly protest it. And I would expect other residents would do the same.
Trump's new border czar, Tom Homan, has said that he is willing to arrest leaders like yourself for standing in the way of these policies that they want to enact. Would you be willing to go to jail for these things?
Yeah, I'm not afraid of that. And I'm also not seeking that. I think the goal is we want to be able to negotiate with reasonable people how to solve hard problems. Republican and Democratic presidents in the past have all tried to find solutions to these problems. President Reagan helped people get access to work so they could stay and support themselves. Biden and Harris worked on restricting entry at the border to close down. There are a lot of ways to approach this problem. We don't think it has to come to this. But yeah, I think when you look at, you know, Ralph Carr has always been one of my heroes. He was the governor who, in the middle of the internment of Japanese Americans, said this was the wrong thing to do. And he stood up. It was unpopular. People were mad at him about it. That was in the middle of wartime. If the president or any of his actors are going to do things that we think are illegal or immoral or un-American, we'll stand up against those.
Did he just, honest to God, compare the internment of Japanese Americans to removing illegal aliens from the country? Like, that's how these people think. And look, I don't want it to come to the point, I do not want Tom Homan or the Trump administration arresting leaders in these progressive cities or states who are pushing back against deportations. Why? Because it's only going to make them martyrs. Can you imagine the video if Donald Trump sends someone from the feds to arrest Bob Ferguson because he's pushing back against, or Nick Brown because he's pushing back against deportations? They'll be the he'll be the governor for life if you do that. So God, don't do that, right? It's all about, you know, coming to the table. I mean, I don't see Bob Ferguson coming to the table with Donald Trump on these things, but it's just, I don't know what it's going to take for them to realize that we're not talking about, at least I'm not talking about, and I really don't think Donald Trump wants feds going door to door, kicking doors in, like ripping parents away from their kids. You know, this is about setting an expectation as a country that if you're going to come here, we welcome you, but you have to do it legally. And that starts with stopping the flow at the southern border and then removing criminal aliens who have violated our laws. And we should all, and you know, New York is a great example of this. Mayor Eric Adams, I should have re-upped it to play again, but Mayor Eric Adams coming out and saying, look, you know, to the same types of questions from the media, saying, look, you're saying that New Yorkers wouldn't support that kind of stuff, but, you know, not all New Yorkers voted for Kamala Harris. So what New Yorkers should I side with? You know, there are obvious implications for New York that, you know, it's pulling on our social services. We have a lot of gang members from Central America who are coming here, who are committing crimes, who are hurting people. So he's looking at it from a common sense perspective, like, yeah, maybe Donald Trump won't have the help of Eric Adams or the active cooperation if he does start going door to door in some of these highly immigrant communities and ripping people out who've been here for 25 years and haven't broken any new laws and have been paying taxes, etc. But, you know, it's like they're jumping to that because they don't want to have the conversation about the violent, you know, gang members who came here illegally or the adult men of fighting age from all over the world who came here illegally. They don't want to talk about that first because they know that that's not popular to advocate for them to stay here. So they just jump to, I'm willing to be arrested for standing up for our immigrant communities, similar to how other politicians stood against internment camps for the Japanese. Like, they see themselves as saviors, and they just totally, and the media lets them do this, totally skip over all these other areas where most Americans are in agreement that these people got to go. So it's just going to, I mean, this is going to be a wild year ahead. It is going to be insane. I don't know how much of you fully grasp that. I'm sure you do. But when it comes to these fights between the states like ours and the federal government, it is going to absolutely suck up so much of the news cycle. All right. So Donald Trump's cabinet has come together. Although, what did I tell you? We didn't get to talk about this last week because we were knocked off the air by the bomb cyclone. Matt Gaetz, I knew Matt Gaetz was never going to be Attorney General. 100% knew it.
You did call that.
There was no way. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely strategic. And here's what I believe happened with Matt Gaetz, because Trump has always loved Pam Bondi, who is overly qualified to be attorney general. She served 2 terms as attorney general in Florida. Donald Trump has always loved her. I believe that Pam Bondi was always Donald Trump's pick for attorney general. Here's genuinely what I think. And you guys were all upset that I don't like Matt Gaetz because I don't like his little douchey attitude. Is douchey swear jar material? No, that's a medical device.
Yeah,
you can literally buy it at the store and it says that word
I
on
know.
It.
Yes,
so
it
that's
does.
Not a swear jar. Grotesque, maybe. Like, yes, not ladylike, maybe. Fine. But here's what I think happened. The report on Matt Gaetz and whether he had some stuff with underage girls was scheduled to come out. And that was a report that was commissioned in this Congress. So remember, like, you're not just a member of Congress until you're kicked out of office. You serve in this Congress, then you're elected to the next Congress, et cetera, for a 2-year term. So I think that there was an agreement made behind the scenes, and this is totally my speculation, but I feel like all the evidence points to this, for Matt Gaetz to get appointed attorney general. He immediately turned around and resigned his position in this Congress. And remember, the Speaker of the House came out and said, that was really surprising. We were kind of caught off guard by that. But by doing that, he's no longer a member of this Congress. So there's no reason for this Congress to release the findings of its investigation. And if they want to investigate him in the next Congress, then they'd have to have another investigation, but they're not going to release one into a private citizen. And so then he withdrew his name in time for Donald Trump to put Pam Bondi in there and have all the timing and math work out. 100% that's what happened. They knew he was never going to be attorney general. Come on. All right. But yeah, some picks coming together. So you've got Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, Scott Bessent, Treasury Department, Pete Hegseth, Defense. He's also getting a lot of grief for past issues with women. We'll see how that all plays out. Doug Burgum, I was wondering what Donald Trump was going to give him. He is going to be Secretary of the Interior, blah, blah, blah. But there's one that is also not angering people on the left. So you have a couple of the picks that people are like on the left are losing their mind over, like the Pete Hegseth and like Matt Gaetz. But now there's at least one pick that has angered some people on the right. So Donald Trump has nominated Dr. Jeanette, I don't know how to say her last name, honestly, Nashewit, as his pick for Surgeon General. She is a medical director. She's also like frequently on Fox News. She right now heads a chain of urgent care clinics in New York City. But she's kind of one of those Fox News talking heads on the medical front. So why would this be problematic for people on the right? Well, she, back when the pandemic was in full swing, said several things that now, in hindsight, are pretty controversial, like this.
You know, this new Delta variant hits right before school starts, and our top priority should be getting kids back into the classroom, but doing so safely. Here's the problem. Delta is different, and that's why the American Academy of Pediatrics is recommending that if you're going to be in a classroom, in a crowded classroom, then you want to protect yourself, wear a mask. Because a lot of kids, for example, under the age of 12, they can't be vaccinated. So it's important to point out, though, masking is not the only solution. We also need to make sure that we have good ventilation, that people are washing their hands, that they're getting tested, and that all the teachers are getting vaccinated as well.
Yeah, so kids wearing masks, absolutely not. That angered a lot of people on the right who thought that that was just dumb and didn't make any sense. She also called the vaccinations when they came out a gift from God, which in hindsight, certainly not a gift from God. So there's a lot of people on the right who are upset by that. I mean, even Megyn Kelly is on social media like, what is Donald Trump doing? Now, there's some like nepotism kind of going on here. So her sister served in Trump's first administration. She was a Homeland Security advisor. She's married to Representative Mike Walls of Florida, who Trump has chosen to be his national security advisor. So there's sort of like some ties there. So obviously this is someone who he's close with, who he knows, who, you know, he's picked people who are in her familial circle. But there are some pretty big conservative voices who are saying, you're really going to choose the lady to be Surgeon General who advocated for kids wearing masks in school, even young kids, and who called the vaccine a gift from God. So I'm curious what you guys think about this. I have my own thoughts on it, obviously, but I made this the topic of our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. I asked if you believe these previous comments by Donald Trump's pick for Surgeon General are problematic. And I chose the word problematic because I didn't want to say disqualifying. I just kind of wanted to be a little more vague than that. Like, do they bother you in some sense? Yes or no? Nicole, what say you?
Well, I think we've all evolved in what we think, what we thought about the pandemic and how to treat children and whatever. I mean, a lot of us from the beginning were like, get kids back in school, no masks, blah, blah, blah. But some people, some high up people, including Trump, were like, do what you got to do. Mm-hmm. So I think if she's evolved from those positions, I see that as okay.
I agree with that only because I've evolved.
Right.
You know, like I took the vaccine. Now I would be like, I'm kind of ashamed of that, you know? And so I have evolved a lot in the last 3 years. And so I can't, that's like pot calling the kettle black. Now, I haven't heard her come out. I could have missed it. I'm not saying she didn't, but I haven't heard her come out and like disavow some of those things, or not even disavow it, but say, hey, in hindsight, the vaccine didn't do what it was supposed to do. Kids don't need to wear masks in school. That's just ridiculous. She could have done that, and I might have just missed it, but I think that would be important because it shows, again, what is the issue that a lot of Americans have had on the right in particular with like the What's the doctor's name?
Oz? No.
No, the Dr. Fauci. The Fauci. And you know, and Governor Dr. Oz, of course.
Well, he's in
there. Well, that's true. That's the issue a lot of Americans had with, like, the way our state and Governor Inslee and our health department, for instance, or if it's Dr. Fauci at the national level, dealt with the pandemic. They weren't willing to change their mind even when presented with obvious information that negated what they were saying or doing. So in order to restore trust in health officials, you have to be willing to, you're going to be wrong sometimes. That's just going to happen. But you have to be willing to come back and say, I was wrong. Here's why I've changed my position. So if she's willing to do that, I don't really see the issue. Truck driver Ken says he has picked a few that could be problematic, including Pete Besant, who worked with George Soros. President-elect Trump is picking people who are supposed to be loyal to him and not interested in writing a book. So I trust him, but time will tell. Certainly some of those people... I have a book on my shelf from Pete Hegseth, so I don't know if that's true. Kathleen, based on past statements, I clicked yes, it is problematic. Perhaps she has been sold out to Big Pharma, but is there any evidence that she has changed her views after being presented with new information? Exactly what I said. And admittedly, Kathleen, I'm not sure. I'd have to scour her Fox News segments throughout the pandemic to see if she walked back those things. Let's see. Christine Dana, it shows they are easily swayed with common sense to popular opinion. And again, yeah, if common sense comes up, like, why not? Rain says, why does he keep effing up? He has a massive chance to do this right. Not even Donald Trump can be perfect.
I don't think he's messing up. It's all the plan.
Is it a plan? Nothing, well, Gates was 100% a plan.
Absolutely.
You're not one of those, like, Trump can do no wrong people.
No,
Nicole.
Not at all. Not at all. But do I think it's all part of a plan? Like, yes, I do. I don't think anything is by
God's plan or Trump's plan.
Trump and maybe something bigger government. Okay. I think there's not a lot of mistakes made in government. It's by design.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's, like, really conspiratory. I think you get to places, like, you have to have these, that's politics.
Well, you're also not always going to make the best choice.
You're making deals. You're making backdoor deals. That's what they do.
Yeah. Like, you promise, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you. 100% in politics, it all happens. Like, people who are going to end up in Bob Ferguson's administration, like cabinet heads, these are going to be people who were loyal to him, who did something, who scratched his back, right? That's just politics, 100%.
And the last time, he maybe made some deals and things didn't work out. So those might have been mistakes on his part. And let me tell you, I don't think he's going to make them this time. I think
loyalty is big.
He does not care what it looks like. He's just going to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, I think that what you're going to see with Trump above capability, I hate to say this, I'm not saying some of these people aren't capable, but above capability is loyalty. I think that if he has to make a decision between capable and loyal, he's going to choose loyal. I don't know if that's a great thing. One of the things I'll say about that is for the president, especially someone like Trump, who's prone to, like, quick, rash decision making, and he's driven, I think, by his emotional reactions to things sometimes, like how he attacks people very quickly without, like, thinking, right? You need some people who aren't going to be yes men and women, they respect you enough where they're not going to undermine you and go out to the press and, like, do all these, like his old people did, right? But who are willing to sit you in a room and say, Mr. President, we can't do that. And I am not confident that. I think it takes a lot. I don't think Donald Trump loves people, like, telling him. I don't know the guy, but from everything we've learned about him, I don't think he loves people being like, no. I think you have to have people who are loyal to you, but who you respect enough to actually take their advice. That's what I want. I'm not sure that's what we've gotten so far. Like, do you really think these people are going to be willing to say no to him if it comes down to it?
Oh, no.
That's what I'm worried about.
No, probably not. But, I don't know. Like I said, I think everything... is all by design anyway, so I don't know. We'll see.
we'll see. The overarching, see. We will see. All right, from X, just a couple comments. Dan Keegan says she really needs to explain herself, and I think that we all agree on that. Reagan, if she hasn't completely disavowed those positions, she shouldn't be eligible for Surgeon General. All right.
It's going to be kind of hard to find a doctor that didn't at some point support a vax, so
yeah,
that is a hard,
that is true,
hard search.
And again, I look at it internally, like, I am not, like, I have changed a lot of my positions from a few years ago, confronted with new evidence. So yeah, as long as you're willing to do that And your position then was in solid ground. Your position now is in solid ground. I don't see why we can't grow and change, right?
Yeah.
All right. So that's what's going on at the national level with former President Donald Trump. Okay. Speaking of news and everything that's coming into focus and the incoming Trump administration, what does it mean for you? What does it mean for the economy? What does it mean for your retirement portfolio? And that's a question I think we're all frankly asking ourselves. Like, I'm quite a few years away from retirement, but we all are planning for that dream retirement, right? We all have in our mind what we want it to look like. And so we're, of course, going to be concerned with how national events, how world events impact our retirement portfolio. That is what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in. Their number one focus is risk management. And so they've got analysts who every single day are tracking all of these things, tracking how the markets react, and tracking all these other indicators in the economy to make sure that if they need to make tweaks to your investments, they're doing so in real time. So if you are worried about these things as well, reach out to Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. Go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. If you've had the same people managing your money for all of these years, it does not hurt to get a second opinion about the strategy that your existing money manager is using. So schedule your free portfolio review now, knowyourriskradio.com. Don't put it off. Don't put it off. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Okay, speaking of not putting it off, did you know that you can give the gift of common sense this holiday season? It is shopping week after all. Maybe you're thinking Black Friday. What do I get that special person in my life? Well, why not give them the gift of Undivided? Patreon just started allowing us to do gift memberships. So maybe you've got, I don't know, your mom who voted for Kamala Harris and who's TDSing over Donald Trump, give her the gift of Undivided. Patreon.com/undivided/gift. Maybe your child who's in college at University of Washington and they're being indoctrinated by their professors to hate the state of Israel, give them a gift of Undivided. Patreon.com/undivided/gift. Now, I don't think you can ever actually give the gift of common sense. That's something they're going to have to come around to on their own. But it wouldn't hurt, right? To get them there. I know everyone has someone in their life who could benefit from a year-long subscription to Undivided. So I think that's the best possible gift you can give someone this Christmas. Patreon.com/undivided/gift. A little promo for ourselves. All right. With that, we'll get to questions and comments. Andy Silly with a $20 super chat. Thank you, Andy. Your frenemy shows, interviews with Nick Brown and Sandeep Kashuk, were anxiety-inducing, but a masterclass in civil debate. Sides listened to and acknowledged the others, but stood firm on their own. The most instructive shows ever. Well, I appreciate that. If you haven't watched this past week's episode of Sundays with Subscribers from yesterday, it was a great one. We had on Sandeep Kashuk. He's a Democratic political strategist, but more than that, he helped lead the efforts to defeat our beloved Let's Go Washington initiatives. He also helped run the winning campaigns of Nick Brown for Attorney General, Dave Upthegrove for Public Lands Commissioner. So we invited Sandeep in. We ended up talking to him for about an hour. It was a colorful conversation. He and I disagree on a lot. We were on opposing sides of virtually everything this election cycle, but I really, really enjoyed our conversation. So if you haven't become a subscriber, that's a really good episode to check out. Yesterday's episode of Sundays with Subscribers, you can access that by signing up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. I'm going to play a clip from that interview coming up on the show tomorrow. Saran Lindsay, massive budget crisis? How? They've done nothing but create and raise taxes since Inslee took office. It's so true. Think about that. Just in the last few years, capital gains tax is brand new. Long-term care tax is brand new. The Climate Commitment Act is brand new. They're bringing in hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars a year through that, and they're still facing a budget crisis. It's because they've never met a dollar they didn't want to spend on something unnecessary. Megan White, emissions trending up. Interesting. Why did they eliminate emissions testing? Interesting question. David Poland, I think crosswalk painting is not real art and is actually disrespectful to art by wearing it out with tires and feet. It looks terrible and is visually confusing to drivers. What does this have to do with?
I think it was on spending. So stop spending money on stupid stuff
like crosswalk painting. On making rainbow crosswalks?
Right.
Yeah, and then it just gets tread on.
Yeah,
and they put people in prison for doing whipping shitties in front of it.
Right.
And it's like, okay.
There was a story, I want to say it was last week while we were without power, but where somebody was in trouble for, again,
yeah,
doing whatever on
whipping donuts.
Right. But it wasn't even clear that that was a like a pride crosswalk. It was just colors and like flowers and things like that. So I was like, how would they even know that that was a pride crosswalk?
If you don't want your art destroyed, don't put it on the ground.
Right. Exactly.
It's so stupid.
They're just morons being morons in the streets.
It's just wild. David Poland, I think and also, may I just say, I just read that comment.
You may.
May I just say, they care more about when someone whips shitties on a pride crosswalk than when they take over an entire street in front of the Space Needle and street race and do donuts for hours on end. Like, the consequences are more severe for doing a burnout on a pride crosswalk than taking over an area of Seattle for the purpose of doing donuts and whipping shitties and all that stuff. That's wild stuff. Unless tells you
that,
a lot.
I feel like we shouldn't make that, like, the cops care about both. It's everyone around them. Like, the cops can't do anything over there, but they can do something over here.
Well, cops get to do what politicians let cops do. That's Let's be clear. Yeah, 100%. That's just the truth. Yep. That's just the truth. Cops get to do what politicians let cops do.
Yep.
All right. On the King County Regional Homeless Authority, Baron of Gray Matter, $10 super chat. They have a snow and a heat plan. They remove homeless from the streets for those events. King County said they don't have a high wind plan. How about the snow plan? Same thing, right? Pathetic. Again, right. It's like, so let's say there's an incoming meteor. Oh, yeah. Well.
No plan.
We don't have a meteor plan. Do they have an earthquake plan? Like, there's a lot of different weather events that can... Do you have a tornado plan? Like, what's your... Like, let's just say if it's severe weather, you just open up emergency shelter and you go out and say you have to come in. Like, this is an option for you to stay here.
Right.
If you care about them, right? And look, like, there are going to be homeless people who say no. What do you do with them? I don't think you do anything. I think you leave them there. You're not going to arrest them and put them in jail because they won't get off the street.
Right.
Like, for an incoming storm, right?
But you gave them the opportunity.
Like, put them under a bridge. Like, hey, okay, you don't want to come in, go under the bridge. So we're not out here cleaning up your body in a day. You know, I hate to say it, but for the love of God. Okay, Night Wolf. Homeless camping out in libraries. Yep, that'll encourage usage by families, especially with children. Yeah, and then they tell them, no, just go sit in a library for the whole day.
Or a mall.
Or a mall.
Wait. I mean, aren't malls private property? Are you telling them to go into private property and camp out in the doorways?
I guess.
A lot of malls have deterrent for that. They have, like, loud music playing and obnoxious stuff.
You're not
going to
be able to sleep here. Corey, send them to the city-county buildings for the state capitol or the state capitol campus. Sleep in state-owned vehicles. I guess. I'd rather have them in there. But it is the people's house. Like, look, I actually do think that the state capitol should be used for emergency shelter situations for anyone who needs it. That's the people's house. I honestly think the governor's mansion should be able to be used for that purpose, too. We pay for it. Let's see. Also from Baron of Gray Matter, stop all the Fed funds to sanctuary cities and states now. Watch how fast they comply. Self-deport, come legally, all good, but not... If not, no chance to ever come. Baron of Gray Matter, you got to help me out here. If you're going to do a super chat, you got to make sure that you put the periods and the commas and all those things. Love you, though. Diana Manning, $10 super chat. Doesn't the Surgeon General report to the Secretary of Health and Human Services? That's RFK Jr. This will be fun to watch. And he's like...
Very anti-vax.
He's always been pretty consistent on the old vaccines. On Denver and governor, was it the governor in Denver or was it the mayor of...
Mayor.
Oh, sorry. Governor. Mayor of Denver. Yes. Wow, Brandy.
Governor of the state. Governor of the state.
And Scott says, if I break the law, they'd kick in my door and separate me from my family. But yeah, if it's the mayor, he gets a nice photo op of him in handcuffs. And then, you know, he gets to campaign on it for the next 10 years of his life. Sean Miller, Sundays with Subscribers was painful this week. Gained even more respect for you, Brandy. Look, you know, we all need to be confronted with opinions that are not our own, or else this will be an echo chamber, and we don't want it to be an echo chamber. And Sandeep Kashuk, you know, I've known Sandeep for a long time. He has spoken out about some of the real insane stuff from Democrats, and so I have respect for him for that. I disagree, as I let him know on Sunday, with a lot of what Defend Washington did to defeat the Let's Go Washington initiatives. I told him to his face. I thought a lot of it was dishonest. He disagrees. Sometimes when I do interviews like this with someone who, you know, I have so much disagreement with and who you have so much disagreement with, like Nick Brown or like Sandeep Kashuk or other Democrats we have on the show, I think people want me to have him on and just yell at him. Like, have him on and just not let him get a word in and just yell at him. You know, there's a fine line for me between being forceful and wanting questions answered and being respectful. And I think anyone who has the willingness to come in and sit down and talk to us for an hour, I think they're there so you can hear what they have to say, not so you can hear what I have to say to them. And so that's why I approach those interviews and let him talk and let him share his position on why they did what they did. And so hopefully that came across. I mean, obviously I disagree with him on most of it, but I don't think it really is informative if I sit there and say, I disagree, and interrupt him every 5 seconds. I'm just not going to do that. Let me see. Greg Olakis, are you saying whipping shitties, Brandy? Curious minds want to know. Yeah, it's called whipping shitties, right?
I haven't heard that either.
When is that a Midwest that, like, thing?
Oh, it might be.
Yeah, whipping shitties. We're going out and we're going to whip some shitties.
Donuts for sure, but.
Yeah, donuts. In Minnesota, we called it whipping. Not that I ever engaged in that,
I was
going to
say, how do you know this?
Not that I ever engaged in that. Okay. You know, it's interesting. I've lived out of Minnesota my entire adult life, basically. So it's funny because some of these trolls on the internet will be like, go back to Minnesota, Brandy. I'm like, I haven't lived there since I was 17. So I don't know what you want me to go back to. But it's interesting, the regional dialect. Like, what do you call it? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the same. When something is diagonal from you, it's what corner?
Kitty corner.
Yeah, it's catty corner.
No, kitty corner.
It's kitty and catty. People do the different. Kitty or catty. It's interesting.
Huh, yeah.
Weiss Castle, I want to know one person who voted for Trump but intentionally voted against the initiatives. I agree. That doesn't make sense to me. And that's the point I brought up with Sandeep on Sunday, is people weren't out voting for Donald Trump and then voting against the initiatives intentionally. That was the result of intentional confusion by the Democratic Party.
And he kind of said that that was the plan, was to take advantage of the tools they had, including misdirect people.
He refused to acknowledge that he thought they lost due to confusion. He did say, yeah, was there probably some confusion, mm-hmm. but on the ballot, so on your ballot with the initiatives, there's that language now, any anti-tax initiative that's going to say, if you repeal this tax, here's what happens. It's bad, bad, bad. He acknowledged that Democrats wouldn't have made that a law if they didn't think it was advantageous to them
helpful electorally,
right? Mm-hmm. They wouldn't do it. So of course they thought it was helpful for them. And he acknowledged that, right? So it's an interesting interview to go check out. All right, where am I at in the show? Comments, questions, all of that. Okay, great stuff. Let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? So I really wanted to talk about this last week, but of course the bomb cyclone happened, which I just think was a manufactured weather event from our enemies to keep us off the air. It's all about us, right? I don't actually think that, by the way, just in case that's clear.
Oh, no.
Just in case that's clear. That was not clear. This came out last week. So Jaguar had a commercial put out online. But you wouldn't know it was a Jaguar commercial or really even a car commercial by watching it. Here it is.
Create. Exploit. Live. Vivid. Delete. Ordinary. Break.
Okay, so Elon Musk commented below that on Jaguar's social media and said, do you sell cars? Because again, it was like, if you watch that, it didn't have Jaguar at the end. It had nothing. It was more like, is this a fashion commercial? Is it a makeup commercial? Is it a Skittles commercial? Because you got all these people, you know, all different skin colors, all different looks, a lot of androgynous looking. They all look a little like, is that a man or a woman? Fine, whatever. All in different colors. So it was like, nothing even resembling anything Jaguar has done before, right? And so Elon tweeted that, and it just kind of got this to be this viral thing. But it's this example of, to me, like, I thought we were past this period of, like, woke advertising. And that's very much what that is. Like, people in dresses, you can't tell if they're a man or a woman. Again, fine. But what does that say about Jaguar and cars? Nothing. So it's just kind of a weird marketing strategy. So I wasn't, like, too mad about it because I'm like, okay, let Jaguar do that. And then their sales will drop and people will buy other cars. Like, that doesn't bother me. But then the car maker said this. This is in the Telegraph. Jaguar boss says criticism of new advertisement is vile hatred and intolerance. Carmaker's chief says company must move away from, quote, traditional automotive stereotypes in order to succeed. And then I was like, that's insane. They put the ad out. I'm like, well, that's just weird. But woke is going to woke. Like, I hope they pay for it, you know, with people not buying their cars. But then if you point out that it didn't resemble a car commercial and you couldn't even tell what they were selling, we're vile, full of hatred, full of intolerance. And you really think the only way that your car company, Jaguar, which was always going to be fine, like everybody always dreams of being in a Jaguar, like you weren't going to hurt for anything. If you really think the only way that your company can move forward and succeed is to move away from traditional automotive stereotypes, then you have not been paying attention for the last 10 years. All right, that has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder to give the gift of Undivided this holiday season. Give the gift of the seed of common sense, if you will. Patreon.com/undivided/gift. And I'd like to know who you gift it to. I'd like to know who you choose to gift an Undivided subscription to.
Nicole, if you had one person, give them a shout out.
If you had one person in your life who you'd gift, who do you give the gift of Undivided to? Who would
it
be?
I mean, I have a couple in mind.
Family members?
Actually, friends first.
Friends first. Like, hey, you should watch this.
My family is fairly sane.
I would give it to my mom, but my mom already has it because I checked too.
Yeah.
Because, like, she might disagree with me, but she's still my mommy. So she's still going to subscribe to my show for $5 a month.
She posted a picture yesterday watching the Vikings game, and she was wearing my Undivided shirt.
Love you, Mom. I love it. So I don't even need to give her the gift of Undivided. She already has it. That's so cute. Oh, I got to go look at my mom's Facebook now. Anyway, thank you for your patience last week as we were out of power in the storm. I appreciate everyone who joined us for our live Q&A on Friday. We weren't able to come into the studio, but we did a little live Q&A. We do those once a month for subscribers. So if you had fun with that, that's another reason to subscribe. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Anything else, Nicole?
No.
What am I missing? I feel like I must have something else to say. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Definitely watch our interview yesterday with Sandy Koshick for his perspective from behind frenemy lines on what happened this election cycle. We've got a lot to discuss on the show this week, from the domestic violent extremism task force that Bob Ferguson dreamed up and is now going to lead as governor, to trying to hold the state accountable for its abysmal response to the bomb cyclone. So join us every step of the way. We'll see you back here tomorrow at noon.